There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Look at the size of those dogs. If one of those wants to eat you, you are no more than a snack, Marnie.
Hey, dude, what kind of dogs are those?
An
American Bulldog and a French Mastiff.
Wow.
Well, I don't know who sold you them, but they're the same. You know that, right?
Hi, I'm Emily Dean. Welcome to Walking the Dog. Remember the three things on your to-do list today? Rate, review, and subscribe. I genuinely feel really excited to hear what you think of the show, so please keep your thoughts coming. This week I went out for a stroll with the hilarious Jimmy Carr and his beautiful little Yorkshire Terrier, Marnie. He's also got two English toy terriers, but we left them at home because they're too good looking and high maintenance to have to walk anywhere. Also, is Jimmy, come to think of it, he likes to keep it real. He didn't even use gloves when he handed me the poo bags to carry. Hashtag blessed.
Do not poop. Don't poop. No pooping. Come on.
Jimmy, you know me better than that by now. I use the toilet.
Come on. Come on, Marnie.
Right, come on, Marnie. We're leaving now. Oh, what a lovely day for it, Jimmy.
Is that your car?
Yeah.
Okay, and you're doing regional sales?
Jimmy's being rude about my Benz.
Very nice.
Jimmy, are you rude about my Mercedes?
I know you like your Merc, so I thought I would tease you.
It does look a bit like I own a really successful chain of dry cleaners
yes.
in the North London area.
Yes, indeed. Well, I just watched this show. Is it Ozarks or Ozarks on Netflix?
Okay.
About money laundering. And suddenly, so many businesses now make sense to me. You know when you see a nail salon and like no one's in there and you go, I've never seen anyone in there. And you go, oh, that's a money laundering place. Welcome to North London.
I love your faux naivety.
Why are you?
About money laundering. So we should say this
my
is...
My faux naivety about money laundering. Hey, listen, there was a bit of tax avoidance. It's nothing too bad. It's all paid back.
So it is paid back. Can I just say it is all paid back? Not a lot of people know that, but it is.
So we should do the intro. So this is my dog, Marnie, who we rescued...
This is Jimmy Carr, by the way.
Oh, hello, I'm Jimmy Carr.
This
and
is Jimmy
I'm walking
Carr,
my dog. I've
and
got
I'm Emily
dogs,
Dean.
Two dogs that are English Toy Terriers who are a, I don't want to say a nightmare, but they've both got sort of health issues, so they don't really come out a lot, which is just as well. I mean, they're only 12 inches tall. They're like a Doberman Pinscher far away, is what my other dogs are like. They're like a sawn-off Doberman Pinscher. That's how I see them. So they're crazy, like Taxi, the little one, who I call Taxi so I could take to the park and shout, Taxi!
But I thought that might have been why you named her.
It's a good, it's
yeah,
a good
it's
name,
great.
Right? And Taxi and Mackie are adorable. I love them, but they can't be around other people because Taxi's a little bit... I don't think he got quite enough oxygen very early on. And as a result of that, he is proper crazy. But that's okay. I don't mind. I don't mind getting nipped every now and then. But then we rescued Marnie from, you know, these people, Blue Cross.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, very good. I've got a photo shoot with her for Blue Cross this week with Rankin, who I really like.
Oh,
so
wow.
We rescued her from Blue Cross. Although the rescue dogs don't get a rescue dog.
Why?
Well, my nana got one, and then she had a fall, and it just sat there and did nothing. They're a disgrace. They're not the fourth emergency service that I thought they
the
might be.
The producer's actually laughing. That's
he's giggling.
Good, Jimmy.
He's giggling. Okay, all right, we're crossing the road. Marnie is looking around for tennis balls. No tennis balls? Right. She's obsessed. So when we adopted her, we had to have like a date. We basically did Tinder for dogs.
Oh,
so
did you?
She came over for a date with the other dogs, and the other dogs, who are crazy, had a little sort of tentative sniff around and went, yeah, no, I like that. That's pretty good.
And
so we got her like as a little, I mean, we just thought we've got a house that's big enough for another little dog and, you know, why not? And she's an absolute joy. She's like the best thing that's ever
she's
happened.
She's so and cute. And what is she, Jimmy, breed-wise?
She's a Yorkshire Terrier, like a classic Yorkshire Terrier. When we got her, obviously, she has slightly longer hair.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, she's cute. And then I cut the hair and kind of went, oh, actually, she's sort of the nicest thing that's ever lived.
And the other dogs, I know you've said to me in the past, which I really enjoy this observation that you thought they're a bit like, it was a bit like dating models or something.
I think English Toy Terriers are maybe the most beautiful dog. And they're also, like, the heritage is really interesting. They're the first ever sort of town dogs. They were bred to be kept in town in the, remember A.A. Gill, God rest his soul, sort of told me the heritage of the dogs. Came over one day and went, oh yeah, I know what they are. And it's the first ever sort of city dogs. And they were ratters.
Because he was a big dog lover,
yeah,
wasn't he?
Yeah, and he loved them, yeah. He was like, they were ratters and they were there to kind of be, you know, small and you could sort of have them in town and they looked cute. So sort of London back in the heyday. And then this is just, a Yorkshire Terrier. And they're just, I don't know, she's adorable, so playful. Sort of feels like you've got a puppy.
Do you think she brings out the best in Mackie and Taxi because her sort of lack of neurosis is infectious in a good way?
That was certainly the plan. It hasn't happened.
Okay.
Hasn't happened. It's, yeah, it's...
But they're some people are too good looking to be nice. And I think that's
true
of your dogs.
I think our ones, yeah, it's dating a supermodel. Some models are all right. Some are a laugh, but I mean that's a real unicorn. Money's just having a pee on everything as we go.
She hasn't pooed yet. I've got the bags here just in case. I've given the bags.
Just in case she or I poo, we've got bags.
And did you? So were you from a dog or a cat family, like a pet family, when you were growing up?
No, when I was growing up, we had my mum enjoyed buying a dog, did not enjoy keeping a dog. And then we had various family members and a wonderful lady called Joan Coleman, who's sort of, you know, one of those people that's kind of like an aunt because they're around so much you just think, well, they're pretty much family.
Yeah.
And she was, so Joan used to, was my auntie Bridie took my first dog. It was a Shih Tzu called Sooty.
And
my auntie Bridie
dog?
Was, yeah, it was my dog, but it was she was an older lady who lived on her own in London. And she took care of the dog. And we went on holiday once. We went on a holiday for like a week. And she took care of the dog. And then we got back and she went, yeah, I mean, you're not taking the dog back. Because she was like really begrudging about taking the dog. And then went, yeah, I mean, this dog's amazing. I've never lived with another thing. It's amazing. I love it. And then the dog lived like...
And did your mum just say, oh, that's okay?
Yeah, what was she going to say? Some poor old lonely relative goes, can I keep the dog? Yeah, you can keep the dog. 100%. You never got to meet my mum. My mum was properly... the funniest person I've ever met. Like, not in terms of kind of gags, not kind of what I do, like, I've written this joke and it's like a magic spell and you will laugh when I say it. Like, she just organically was just funny.
Was
in a
she?
Way that, yeah, well, I think I had a really interesting chat about mums the other day with Clang, Jim Carrey. I'm such a big hitter. I just got back from this comedy festival. But we had a chat about mothers. We were chatting about, because he said this beautiful thing on stage about how most comedians, you know, people talk about tears of a clown.
Yes, they do.
Oh, hang on. Did she just do a poop? I think she just did a poop.
I'm going to run in.
Poop. She did a poop.
I really hope that's Marnie's poo.
I'm pretty sure it is. I mean, I'm not being sort of specialist about this. It's definitely not mine.
Yeah, but it's quite big. It looks like it could be sort of Greg Davis's poo.
Greg Davis is, he's mainly an indoor man these days. I'd say 90% of the time. That might be it for money. So we're chatting about mothers and saying
that
cliche about comedians, like the tears of a clown, they're all depressed.
Yeah.
I don't think that's true, but I do think universally you can ask any comedian you know, oh, did you have a sick parent? Did you have a mother or a father that needed cheering up, either depressed or physically sick?
Right.
That's almost 100%.
Really?
Of like, oh, they needed cheering up. You needed to make it all right.
And which one was true in your case then? Your mum was ill, yeah.
Yeah. And a bit depressed or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
Latterly. But just, you know, but comedy had, like, that was the way of kind of making everything's all right. If we're laughing, then everything's okay.
And was that your role in the family, do you think? As the person, you were the funny one?
I'm not sure whether I really had much of a role. Not a kid, you know, I mean,
no.
One of the kids. One of the kids. Try and keep quiet. Stay out of the way.
Because I heard you talking. I listened to your Desert Island Discs and I absolutely loved it.
Well, that's what this show needs, some records.
Well, I know. I was going to say. I mean,
we're walking a dog.
Saw Jimmy Carr. You've chosen Beyoncé's Crazy in Love.
I did.
But no, I loved your...
Death Cab for a Cutie.
You made her sound like Frankie Boyle.
Yeah, same. That's what I hear. The Beyoncé was a really good choice because there's been an ongoing thing online for years about no one's chosen Beyoncé for their Desert Island Discs.
Marnie's met someone.
Marnie's met a dog. Look, no. No, he's a nice boy.
He's a nice boy,
girl.
Marnie.
I'm not good with these things.
Yeah, you never know.
If that's a girl, it's got massive testicles.
Marnie's not too much of a fan of other dogs.
Not huge. She's little. She's having a very nice time. She's a happy little creature.
You talk with such affection about your mum, and it seemed to me that you had a really lovely relationship with her.
Yeah, it's like, you know, it's a nice thing as well. And it's that, I heard a beautiful quote the other day, which I'd never heard before. I'm sure it's a very a common thing, but the grief is the price we pay for love. So that was a really beautiful way of sort of saying, actually, that kind of slight melancholy remembering is actually a lovely way of kind of reminding you how much someone meant to you and how much that was kind of worth. It's kind of a nice way of
summing up. Also, you know, you were saying your mate, Jim Carrey.
Oh, well, I mean, sure.
No, but you were referencing your conversation with Jim Carrey, which I liked what you were talking about, because there's also, as well as Tears of a Clown, there's another cliche, which is that sense of people who lose a parent at a slightly early age that's too early. And in your case, it was too early, I think, in your 20s, weren't you? So do you think that sort of propels you and, you know, people like, whether it's Madonna or Chris Evans, or I don't know, you know, those people often talk about how that was the inciting incident in their life, if they've led a slightly unusual, a kind of extraordinary life.
I don't know. I mean, I think you look for reasons, don't you? You look back and look for... I think you just sort of live your life and you make the choices that you make and you try and do the best that you can. And then you try and analyse it when you're talking like this, and you try and sort of find a pattern. You try and find something that kind of makes sense of it. I think often it's the case that we feel so sort of... It's such a privileged life. Right? What do I do for a living? I tell jokes to people that come out and want to spend a night with me, sort of, you know, telling them jokes. It's a very sort of privileged position. And you kind of go, well... Come on, Marnie, you can't smell everything. It's such a privileged position. You kind of look for a way of kind of taking ego out of it a little bit and going, oh, well, maybe it's because of that thing that happened early on that maybe that's what made me do it, rather than just going, well, I'm pretty terrific. I suppose it was destined, you know. So I don't know. I mean, I think it can be certainly the catalyst. I think it's sort of the... I certainly think it kind of makes you... gives you a certain sort of independence or sort of belief in, well, you know, I've just got one life.
Yeah, it's I'm just going to put the poo in the bin.
Oh, yeah, good idea.
I mean, I lost people, but mine was more like a kind of Game of Thrones episode. It all happened very quickly.
Yeah, I mean, so, it was really...
one, two, three, bam.
Even on Game of Thrones, they would have gone, whoa, that's a hell of an episode. That's a season finale. It's an odd thing that the...
carpe diem thing,
well, yeah, because
it?
I think it does change your perspective, because it's... I think death is something that we sort of spend... I mean, there's a lot of kind of... talked about how, you know, sort of laughter and... it's kind of the opposite of death, you know, sort of feeling alive... We spend so much time kind of avoiding that.
Yeah.
And then when it happens, it does change the way you think about everything, because it's obviously always the elephant in the room.
Yeah. When you were sort of growing up, you had, after you went to Cambridge, which was obviously kind of a big deal.
Wow.
Even though you played it down, I think, a bit.
I don't know. I mean, I think like everyone that ever goes to those kind of places, I thought it was an admin error.
Marnie's met, is that a schnauzer?
Yeah, she met a schnauzer, and I think she's going to fuck him. Think she's going to break him off a piece of this Kit Kat bar. Come on, Marnie. Come on, get some. Get some. Is that... No, good-looking fella? This not for you.
That's the worst piece of porn I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Come on, Marnie. Did you like that schnauzer? Yeah, so what I mean by that is, like, a lot of people don't know you went to Cambridge. Frank Skinner said, oh, I didn't know Jimmy went to Cambridge. Not in that thicko way.
Yeah. They've really tightened up the admin process now. They've really tightened it up since... They went, that never again.
But I don't think
it's that big a bigger deal. I think there's like a... I read a brilliant thing that J.K. Rowling wrote about this, about there being a statute of limitations on certain things in life. And like going... And it sounds really harsh, but I think there's like... I'd say the age of 30. If you're still going on about an academic achievement after the age of 30, something's gone horribly wrong. Something's gone horribly wrong. What are you doing? I've got a lot of A-levels. Right, I mean, no one cares. You're 44. Get over it. We've all got friends, we could name them now, that have never got over their academic achievements. So you go, that's just an... Unless you're an academic...
I know.
Just enough. I mean, you're not Naomi Klein. Get over it. You know, it's... But also, I think there's a statute of limitations on the other thing that we're talking about, which is childhood trauma. I think that there comes... And it should be like a societal thing if you go... 25, you're 25, it's a big birthday, you get a cake, we're all going for drinks, and anything that happened in your childhood, enough already. Enough, no matter how bad it was, you have to take responsibility now. That doesn't seem like an unreasonable thing, and I know that's really callous, because some people do have the worst time, but to what end? It's no good complaining about that beyond a certain point. You want to kind of go, well, no, you've got to do your own thing, make your own life. What's make that? This one better.
There's one view that's callous, and then there's another one, which I tend to subscribe to, which is that you're sort of taking responsibility for your life, aren't you? And you're saying
they don't
that's
have
not
power over me anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's a little bit Christina Aguilera. Thank you. It's a little bit as a philosophy, but I view that as a good thing. I think hell of a
after
voice that
all
girl.
You did to me.
Yeah, hell of a voice.
I love that quote.
What did they do to her? I think they broke up with you.
I think they put her in chaps.
Did they?
Backless chaps.
Backless chaps.
Yeah.
That is a... Whoever... I don't know who... Obviously, it's the unsung heroes of pop. But yeah. Whoever put Christina Aguilera in backless chaps, can we buy her a drink collectively?
That was a
good wonderful
look,
thing.
It?
I've moved on to Selena Gomez now.
Jimmy loves Selena Gomez.
What, that new track? Well, not the new track. This will be going out in a while. But the track with the... it's got the bass line from Psycho Killer by...
Oh, yeah.
And it's just so catchy.
You love
I mean,
that.
So catchy. It's the crack cocaine of pop.
So is that in Jimmy's car when he's driving to one of his gigs?
No, I just, you know, it's on occasionally, that kind of thing. I like a little bit of...
Well,
I like
Jimmy.
A bit of pop. I've got quite Catholic taste in music. I like everything.
We should say we're in a leafy part of North London.
Well, we're just about to come to the top of Primrose Hill, which
yeah.
is... I find this view... I mean, I do like a view.
Yeah.
That's kind of my idea of... sort of heaven is like somewhere nice for lunch and a nice view. That's kind of, I mean, it's like it's sort of London in front of you, and it kind of just feels like you can sort of take it all in.
So,
also, there's a
I realise you have
here,
a long-term
like,
partner, but do you come here often?
Yeah, I come down the park a lot. Yeah,
yeah,
mainly at night. I come up here quite a lot. I sort of really like the feel of it because it feels obviously it's the heart of London, sort of Primrose Hill, and it's a beautiful area to live in, but also. Because there's always loads of sort of tourists around, it always feels quite sort of quite fun. Like there's quite a nice energy to that. It always feels
yeah.
like kind of it's almost like you've kind of gone on holiday.
Yeah, I know.
And
what
then
you
if
mean.
You can kind of stop for a minute and sort of stop thinking about living here and sort of go, well, if you went anywhere else in the world and they showed you this, you'd go, wow, it's pretty amazing.
And it's other people enjoying London, isn't it? Which is nice. Which is kind of a healthy reminder.
Yeah, I think
we look up sometimes.
I think I'm in London next week. I've got like sort of 4 days off in a row next week, which is sort of unusual for me. And. I think we're just going to stay in London and try and do just fun stuff here rather than sort of fly somewhere and do fun stuff there. Because it's kind of great, isn't it? I always kind of think whenever I drive past the zoo, I go, I never spend enough time in the zoo. I go out of my way when I'm going to London to drive past the bit where you can see the giraffes.
Actually, this is amazing, this view. I mean, I appreciate I've lived here a long time, but I mean, you can't see this, of course, but take our word for it.
Yeah, I mean, this is the worst thing that anyone's ever said in a podcast. Next week, ballet. But, you know, we've got the kind of the post office
didn't tower. Didn't we turn around? We're going to have our picture taken.
Oh, okay. 3, 2, right, why do we have to go quiet for the picture?
I don't know. Why did I go quiet?
I don't know.
Quiet?
We have to go quiet for a picture.
Yeah, but is Marnie in it? Can you see Marnie? Can you see Marnie in the picture?
Hey, Marnie Bean. Look, that way. Yep. Yep, look at my balls. Cool.
So, yeah. So, after Cambridge, Jimmy.
Yeah, go on.
And you did political...
Social and political science?
You did political science.
The potpourri of a degree.
Yeah.
I believe. The general studies of a degree. lot of little things. Nothing in depth.
But when you decided to do that, was that with a view to... Did you think you'd go into politics or something?
No. I didn't have... I mean, it was literally... I mean, I've sort of talked about this before, but
yeah.
I don't think I'd made a decision, really, in my life until I was about mid-20s. It was just like, oh, shall I do A-levels? Yes, obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
Shall I go to university? Yes. Which one? Well, the best one I can get into. And then, you know, and what course shall I do? The easiest course at the best place. I'm not an idiot. And, you know, so that, it really kind of didn't fit. And then why should I get a job? Well, I guess some blue chip big company. Is that what people do? No, Marnie, you can't pee on that. That's a man's leg. Stop it. That is a man's leg.
It was a lamppost coloured leg,
he's not,
to be fair. That's
he's not going to he's not gonna hit you, is he, Marnie? people are sunbathing. It is not warm enough to sunbathe.
No, but they're enjoying themselves, look.
They are enjoying themselves. And they're lovely.
It's like
time.
A Schirra painting.
I always think, sort of this time of year, it's kind of a wonderful time to feel more... I mean, I don't mean this to sound callous, but the rest of the year, you pass homeless people in the park drinking at 10 in the morning and think, oh, where did, you know, where did their life go wrong? That's terrible.
Mm.
This time of year, you sort of go, oh, yeah, that's a pretty good idea. We should get some cans. It's a weird thing,
yeah,
isn't it?
No,
when the
mean,
sun comes out, you kind of go,
yeah.
Yeah, outdoor drinking, yeah, let's.
Yes, you're right, actually. It's more kind of inspiring outdoor life. Outdoor life doesn't become... It's not necessity.
Couple
it's choice.
A couple of guys. He's got a Stella. He's got a Kronenbourg. No special brew. They haven't gone to the special brew level yet. You know the story on special brew?
No, but he's...
You know the story on special brew?
No, go on.
It was made for Churchill.
Is that right?
Yeah, so Churchill, you know, the Danes after the war went, Churchill, look, thanks awfully, we never liked those Nazis. What can we do for you? We're going to brew you a beer. And obviously, then Churchill's people went, yeah, don't brew him a beer, because he's actually he's an alcoholic. He likes drinking. Beer, he's no interest at all. It's for women and children, as far as Churchill's concerned. And then they went, well, what if we made you like a ludicrously powerful beer? And they went, have a dart at it. And they made special brew. And for him, like, presented him with a can. I'm sure he shotgunned it.
I can't imagine Churchill with a special brew.
I can imagine him in the park. Of course, you know the other great park story about Churchill, which was during the war, one of the... a minister was caught in flagrante in the park.
Yeah.
I think in like, Westminster or, like, Green Park or something, there was, like, a cottaging toilet. So a gay member of parliament during the war, though, part of the coalition government, was caught by police officers in the park toilets with another gentleman. In the park with another gentleman. And obviously they went, it's wartime. They're not going to arrest the guy, whatever. It's a matter of, you know, national interest. So they went to Churchill, you know, gets woken up early and you know, in the morning, the briefing, or this minister has been, you know, and his reaction was to say, what temperature was it last night? I said, what? -4, sir. Ah. Makes you proud to be British. Such a lovely... Leave that lady's legs alone.
I like that reaction. I like to think that would have been your reaction.
I think that would have been, you know... Well, of course, we sort of, you know, obviously all the... It's kind of the anniversary of that recently. All those kind of laws, you know, the decriminalisation. But it was still like a stigma for many, many years being gay. But it feels like there was like... It must have been a case in society where people, you know, knew. There was always a thing. They must have...
Well, that's the thing, but I suppose you just... Yeah. Have you had enough?
You're in a kerfuffle. Yeah. I would say she's a bad walker.
I think she's doing pretty well, actually.
Is she doing all right? She kind of stops dead every now and then. Look at the size of those dogs. If one of those wants to eat you, you are no more than a snack, Marnie.
Oh, my God, they're huge.
Yeah.
What are they, Timmy?
What are they? I don't know. And whatever.
Again, this isn't very interesting for you, but
whatever, a cross between a dog and a horse. They kind of look like.
That's essentially what they
are. They look a slightly bovine. Hey, dude, what kind of dogs are those? An American bulldog and a French mastiff.
Wow.
Well, I don't know who sold you them, but they're the same. You know that, right? You know they're both the same.
They're both rescues.
Okay, I got mine's a rescue, but from a burning building, like actually a rescue. Yeah. Actually, and it was pretty dangerous. I don't want to make a big deal, but it was, I'm basically a hero. We better get away before one of your dogs.
Nice to meet you.
Take care. They're beautiful, aren't they?
Oh, they're
beautiful.
Lovely dogs. I bet they eat a lot, though.
Mainly children.
Of course.
How gorgeous looking creatures.
But obviously that's fascinating to people, and it's interesting how you had that life change, which you did. Your life was going in one direction, really, wasn't it?
Well, I think there's a weird thing where people... well, certainly I thought that unless you went to drama school or were somehow in a family that did comedy or something, you couldn't be a comedian. I had no conception of how does that happen.
Yeah.
How do you become the person that tells the jokes for a living? But I think that life change thing's quite... It's quite nice when you chat to people that have... You know, just left college.
Yeah.
And they're kind of doing something and they go, right, I'm being a lawyer and that's going to be it now. I'm a lawyer for life. And you kind of go, I don't know whether it works like that anymore. I don't know whether, I mean, for some people it does, but mostly people kind of go, well, they do a bunch of different things. And
did you feel once you'd made the decision, which was it just a case of waking up one morning thinking,
I think it's really about not depression, but sadness. It's about feeling like you don't like your life. Which isn't sort of, I think a lot of people, you know, depression's it's a horrible thing, and I haven't really suffered with depression. I'm very lucky, I think. We've just seen a chihuahua, which I believe. Go on, eat it. Eat it. Come on, Moni, you can
very
eat that.
Tiny
it's a little
chihuahua.
Snickle snack. I mean,
very
it's a beautiful dog.
It's lovely.
It's very cute. Oh, no, don't eat it. Don't eat it. Or do eat it. Do eat it. I don't think you're going to eat it.
Is that a puppy?
Yeah.
Is he a puppy?
Oh,
puppy. How old?
Four months.
4 months.
4 months. Okay.
Is he a teacup, though?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's lovely.
It's a big cup of tea, isn't it? I mean, it's a tiny dog, but it's a big cup of tea. That's
it's
probably too much tea.
Yeah.
You need four sugars in that. Oh, yeah. That is adorable.
It's so gorgeous.
Yeah. Oh.
Hello.
And oh, no, it's fierce. It's taken Em's finger off. She's been very brave. You know when people say, oh, your eyes are bigger than your belly?
Yeah.
On that dog, actually the case.
So lovely to meet you. And good work on the shoes you're wearing for the dog
walk.
Yeah,
that is a very strong shoe game.
This lady's got...
I think Miu Miu's.
Louboutins or Miu Miu's? Oh, gee.
Huh?
You got it right. I'm so proud.
I know. Not even gay, but I'm good with shoes.
Mm.
Well, look, good luck. Good luck with the teacup.
Lovely shoes and dog. Thank you. In that order. That's a nice chihuahua interlude. I know, I'm so sorry. The embarrassment.
You're the worst. You are the worst.
It's like being with...
The interview ends now.
It's like Mean Girls. So, you know, you were saying, I think that's interesting. So you were saying, actually, that's what propels you. You're thinking, oh, I could be happier than this. Is that what it
was
like?
Yeah, I think so. I think you've got a sort of, not a rock bottom, but you have to kind of... I always really like that quote, the good is the enemy of the best. The idea that you go, like, if your life's all right, and you've got... I had quite a good job. And you know, John Bishop and I have sort of spoken about this because he had a good job. He's like, you know, if you've got a good job, it's tough to leave. If you work in a call centre and you hate it, then it can be easier to kind of take the leap because you go, well, I've got to do something. Mm. Whereas if you've got quite a good one and you can see your boss's life is quite good and you could have that in 5 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing of kind of going, you have to do something better. You have to kind of, maybe the death thing as well kind of comes into that because you go, you've got one life. What are you doing?
Yeah.
What are you doing? If you're not having fun, what's it for?
And did you think there was a point where you thought, I might be the funniest man in the office, that's what's going to happen to me?
Not so much, not that, because actually I was so kind of down when I worked, I wasn't really that fun in the office. I think I was just kind of, oh god, we've got to do more of this,
really.
Which wasn't, you know, it wasn't a bad job, wasn't a bad office, wasn't a bad, you know, wasn't a bad place to be. And people were very supportive. I remember I had a really nice boss at one stage called Mike Hall, who was just very encouraging. And I thought, well, I want to leave this job. And I went and got a job with some consultancy firm, Boston Consulting or whatever, I was going and having an interview with. And went at the interview and he went, what are you doing? He went, that's the same job somewhere else. What are you doing? Go do something else. This isn't for you. In the nicest possible way. It wasn't being, you know.
You know, it's interesting what you're saying, that when I interviewed Alan Carr, he was saying he worked in a factory. You know that idea that you're either a transmitter, basically, or receiver. So you're someone who likes to communicate.
I think you've misunderstood the conversation with Alan. It feels to me like he was explaining an intimate detail of his life to you, and you've gone, oh, you're either a transmitter or a receiver. And you go, yes, yes, we understand how tops and bottoms works.
Was he trying to involve me in something?
I think he was trying to, yeah.
Know.
You hold this.
No, but you know what I mean. It's not, I see what you're saying, I suppose, is you're not saying, oh, people that do jobs like that, how can you? It's just that sense of,
no, I think
that
it's,
wasn't right for you. That didn't feel like you
it's
were
also,
living
some
your
people,
best life.
Some people are like, you know, I think I've got a lot of friends that kind of have jobs that are, they work to live.
Yeah.
Not live to work. You know,
yeah.
And I'm very lucky, you know, when I talk about having a, you know, privileged position, I do something that I love for a living. And I suppose, you know, you could say, oh, well, you probably work too much. But you sort of go, yeah, but work is more fun than fun.
Yeah.
There's nothing more fun than what I do for a job. So it's a kind of false read, I suppose.
I think you're a really happy person. Like, I think you've got a happy disposition.
Yeah.
And
I'm good at knowing what makes me happy. That seems to be the interesting question. Like, if you ask anyone anything, like the, what do you want? Fundamentally, the most important question is, what do you want? And if you can answer that, getting it comparatively easy, knowing what makes you happy is actually the tough thing. You know, in that way that people kind of go, well, you know, I want a Ferrari. You go, well, do you though? What you actually want is excitement, or you want the admiration of others, or you want to feel self-confident, or, you know, whatever those things. If you can get to kind of that base level of knowing what you want, then, and I think that's, you know, not to be too objectivism and Ayn Rand, I think it's that personal responsibility for your happiness is all you can have. You can never really be responsible for anyone else's happiness.
And so what do you want?
Hmm?
What do you want?
Well, I mean, this life's pretty good. I like the life of a comedian. I think the idea of success is you get a false read on what that is because people sort of think it's being on telly or being getting a Hollywood deal or stuff, and it's actually the first time you get paid to say funny things at a club.
Right.
That's when you made it. That's it. As long as you can, you know, pay for your life with that, then that's a joy.
But
that's
then,
everything.
Do you think also you differ from some people in that the intention I never felt for you was I will get on TV by any means necessary. It was I want to make people laugh. You know, I feel like being a gigging comic seems to be your driving force rather than...
Well, I suppose the reason I work the way I work is because it's ultimately the telly thing is someone else's decision.
Right.
And at some point you have to be gracious when someone comes along and says, that's not you anymore. We've got some new people and they're younger and they're funnier and we prefer them and you're yesterday's news. And, you know, at some point that phone call comes or that... I mean, it gradually comes, hopefully, and you transition into something a little bit different. But no one stays at the top of their game forever. No one stays kind of doing those shows. Well, I think that's, you know, it's inevitable. But the stand-up thing, if you build an audience and you're good to them and you do funny shows, then hopefully they keep coming back and you get to kind of sustain that.
Yeah.
And even if the audiences get smaller, play smaller places.
Yeah.
You know, don't have an ego about it. Just go out and... Well, these people turned up. Come on.
But you've got to the stage now where you're so established and you've got such a big fan base, presumably, that you'll always have people come to see your show, won't you?
Yeah, I think so. But, I mean, in the same way as those kind of old school comics, you know, always had that thing, you know. So if you look at someone like, I don't know, you know, Jethro, it's like an old school comic that's never been on telly, but still does his thing, still plays the gigs that he used to play, might not be as big as it used to be, but it's still, you know, it's still a thing, still a great job.
Mm.
And there's something about the adrenaline or the high of being on stage, the fun of making people laugh, that's just, you can't, I mean, you kind of can't beat that.
I think you enjoy fame. I mean, in the sense that there are some people I know who are really privileged, you know, and have great lives and have achieved everything they want to, but it's like it seems sometimes to make them quite unhappy. And I've never really had that sense with you. And I wonder why that is.
I think it's a very... You know what? I've got a very comfortable level of fame. And it's... you know, and again, you know, you have to realise how lucky you are, because a lot of people want to be famous. I think it's kind of a... There's an argument to say it's a natural state. Because, you know, for hundreds of thousands of years, humans lived in groups of, what, about 60? And we all knew each other.
Yeah.
And seeing a stranger would have been the unusual thing. You know, that would have been it would have been out of the ordinary. Whereas we're walking through a park and just nothing but strangers.
Yeah.
And weirdly, I get a thing where I'm recognised by a lot of people, and it's a
You're
nice
not
little,
stranger to
but
these people
don't, I mean,
yeah.
Even when we walk around the park, I've been recognised by, I don't know, 30 or 40 people. But no one, you know, no one comes up. People just, all right. It's like, I mean, partly that's a London thing of like, oh, whatever. And partly I'm not that... You're not that big a deal as a comedian. And I don't mean that in a bad way.
Mm.
I just mean that everyone's got a sense of humour. No one thinks they're bad at sex and no one thinks they don't have a sense of humour. No one. Everyone thinks, oh, I'm all right with that. I'm all right. So everyone's got their sense of humour, so it's right for them. So if you make someone laugh, it's sort of the closest you can get as a celebrity to being someone's friend. Whereas a singer or an actor, they're on a pedestal. You can never do that. You hear Adele's voice, you go, well, never going to happen. I'm never going to be able to sing like she sings. It's a siren call. Or you see an actor do something that's just extraordinary, and you kind of go,
yeah.
Oh, my God, and they're in your favourite film, and it means so much to you. Whereas when you hear me make a joke, you go, yeah, we've all told jokes. Here's one for you. The amount of people that come up and tell you their joke.
Do they?
Yeah, it's nice.
And do you like it when people do that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
I mean, it also, the thing I like most is that the almost the Pavlovian response that you will work dogs in somehow. The Pavlovian response you get for...
Such a pro.
For people, when people go... They come up to you, you're in a newsagent buying a can of something, and they go, all right, how are you? Kind of a, there's kind of a laughter, but you haven't said anything. It's just they've kind of remembered, oh, you're the funny guy from the show that we watched.
Well, in the numbskulls of their mind, they've stored you away in the department marked funny, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
But you, it's interesting, because your comedy is It's quite distinct from your personal life, isn't it? I think there's a real... It's not... Because you don't do observation comedy.
Well, it's... Yeah,
in
it's
the traditional sense, you do...
It's very unusual
gags.
In this day and age because it's... I tell jokes.
Yeah.
It's very old-fashioned. I mean, in a way, it's kind of... it's kind of corny or it's very exposing as a sort of method of doing comedy.
Why?
Because, well, because if you talk about your life, even if there's no punchline there, it's quite interesting. So if you get a good observational comic, even if they just tell you a story about how their life made them feel, it's like, well, that's the interesting bit. There's a brilliant American comic called Neil Brennan.
Yeah.
Do you know him? He did a show called Three Mics, which is on Netflix.
Oh, okay.
And
yeah.
Three Mics, it's a genius idea for a show. So basically, one of the mics is one-liners.
Yeah.
One of the mics is stand-up, and one of the mics is the truth. And I'd recommend you watch it. It's really interesting.
Yeah,
but you watch the hour,
I've heard of that.
And at the end of it, you kind of go, no, just be on the truth, Mike. Just be on the truth. Don't worry about the jokes. Just tell us what happened with your dad. That's the thing.
Exactly.
And but it's interesting when you see the three together, you go, the difference, and I just do the one-liners. Just the one-liners, just the jokes, just the... I remember seeing a comic many, many years ago on stage. He just went, I'll start off with some jokes. And he told 10 jokes in a row, just one-liners in a row.
Yeah.
And I remember really clearly thinking, that should be the whole show. That should be the whole thing. There's no fat on that.
Right.
You're just making people laugh. And then they get into this kind of an altered state.
Yeah.
Of just like going, washing over them and like, you know, enjoying the jokes and liking the phrasing. And that's what I would want to see as a punter. But, you know, sometimes, I mean, the grass is always greener. You sort of watch someone do a brilliant observational piece and think, oh, wow, that's really touching and beautiful.
Does something really hilarious ever happen to you and you think, oh, that would be, maybe I'll do my show this year like this?
What, and,
I'll just do
and
an
build
hour
it around
observation.
A story?
Yeah.
No, I've got some kind of notes on things that I think, oh, maybe I could do that as a bit of a show at some stage. But I almost feel like that would be a great gear to find later. Like at the moment, I've got the energy and I write a lot and I'm sort of doing this best of tour at the moment, which is almost like having a sabbatical. I'm knocking out the hits like a rock band. It's weird. It's a weird thing because, I mean, the first night was so nerve-wracking because I thought, this is either going to work and I booked 2 years of gigs. It's either going to work or it isn't. And if it isn't, I don't know what the f*** I do.
So is this 2 years, this tour then? And it's your best of, so presumably...
It's like I've done like nine specials, close to sort of 12 hours of... material, and I just picked my favourite sort of 10 minutes out of each show, my favourite jokes, and then wrote other bits for them around them, and there's a few little sort of new bits in there, but basically it's kind of telling those again. But I'm kind of amazed at the response it gets, because of the volume of jokes I tell in an hour, they don't kind of acknowledge, or that somehow they haven't registered that they know the joke.
That's interesting.
Because you forget almost instantly. I think you just remember the laughter, you don't remember the line so much. So it's not like, I don't know, Monty Python doing the... You know, because my jokes aren't that famous. They're
there
not
is that
like,
sense of comics becoming stars.
I think we had a few moments where I think there's... I mean, my opinion is kind of there's comedians that you go to see and there's comedians you go to listen to. And I think someone like a, you know, Peter Kay or Michael McIntyre, I think are kind of... Good comedians get laughs, great comedians get love. I think people go and see them and they love them. They just want to be in the room with them. They want to... It's almost kind of worshipping. It's almost like... Even if they were saying stuff they'd said a million times before, they find them just, it's like a friendship. They're a wonderful presence. And then there's people you go to, you know, I think I've got a different thing where people come and they go, I'm just going to, obviously they're coming to laugh at their jokes as well. I'm not like denigrating those guys. Like they're coming to listen to the jokes as well, but there's another factor. So I think they can carry off an arena and be like, and that rock star thing. Whereas I think me in an arena would just be a bit like, we're a long way away, aren't we? Or hang on, I told him to off and he didn't hear me. Is terrible.
Little Jimmy. You're very well known as well, aren't you, for your ability to kind of take down hecklers.
Oh God, I had a great one last night. Crazy.
What was that?
Just someone proper crazy. Proper crazy in the front row. But there's always, you know, you can always kind of find a fun way of doing it. And I'm always very conscious of, are they drunk or do they have an issue? Is there something going on there?
Isn't that just the equivalent of the troll on Twitter saying, I will be heard?
I suppose. I mean, I always think it's quite, you know, well-meaning. I always think, like, anyone that shouts out in a club, it's quite well-meaning. They want to be part of the show or they want to be up there.
Yeah.
Maybe they're a frustrated performer or they want to do something. So you let them. Great. And ultimately, it's like, there's no lose with hecklers. I think people worry about being heckled and made to look like a fool, but they've paid to see you, you know, beyond a certain level. You kind of go, well, you can't go wrong with this, can you?
Do you think great when that happens?
Yeah, it's got someone else taking the strain. And if they get a brilliant laugh, and you know, if they say something genius, you kind of go, well, all right, it's a big laugh.
Yeah.
I'm not splitting the money with you. Good luck and everything.
But again, that's a very... let's go down here and then we can get a drink, because I'm quite thirsty. We could take one. But again, Jimmy, that's a very... Oh.
What happened?
Just a wee.
Just a wee. That's Marnie just doing a wee.
Again, that's a very glass half full approach, which I think you have. So when you're feeling more... sad moments sometimes.
When?
Jimmy, sad moments.
When?
When did you last cry?
I'm trying to think. Probably yesterday.
Why?
I went to see Dunkirk. And I cried at the end of Dunkirk. Like properly.
Oh,
streaming.
Spoiler alert. Sorry.
Spoiler alert. Yeah, no panic. It turns out we won the war. I googled it. Oof, that was close. Yeah, you know, I'm quite, you know, I think that's an absolutely legitimate thing as well.
Yeah.
You watch that and kind of go, oh God, our generation, what have we done? What have we got to grumble about?
But that's a nice cry, isn't it? Like
yeah,
a movie
it's
and stuff.
Well, it's also that kind of thing of you have sort of the admiration for not even even those individuals, but that generation of like,
yeah.
I can't imagine, like total war now would be like, if you told people they couldn't charge their phones, they go, well... I'm not sure. What do the Nazis say about phone charging?
Well, that would be the reason for draft dodging. Oh my God, I can't even get reception out there.
Yeah.
I can't believe it.
What do you mean it's top secret? I've got it on Facebook. It's a private Facebook.
It's encrypted though. I thought it was okay.
Yeah, no, it's on Snapchat. Don't worry about it.
Yeah,
it's honestly, fine. Don't worry about it.
Oh, there's the Chihuahua, Jimmy.
I really like
that Chihuahua.
Oh, again, hey. Should we go back to ours for something to drink?
Yeah, that shall we? Let's wander down here. So, I'm really lucky because I get invited to your parties, which are incredible. You're like a modern-day Gatsby, Jimmy.
I am.
How do you feel about that
comparison?
I am
a modern-day Gatsby. I met a guy once who claimed he was related to the Great Gatsby. Genuinely. Claimed he was related to the Great Gatsby. And I went, it's a fictional character. And he went, it was based on my grandfather. Was it? It turned out his grandfather had killed the Pope. So it was a.
Wow.
I met a madman. I like having a party. I think it's a really nice. There's nothing nicer than hosting.
Yeah.
Than having people over and kind of, you know, the largesse of, hey, come over and let's you know, celebrate.
Yeah. But what I love about your parties is that it's not just like any other party, because you walk into a room and then there's Stephen Hawking in one room, and then in another room there's sort of the Killers, and then you go outside and then there's two people playing tennis who both won Wimbledon, and it is quite strange.
Well, I've got an odd group of friends. I'm not, you know, I think it sounds there's a lot of old school friends as well, and kind of you know, regular folk. But yeah, I suppose that's one of the great things about, you know, the life of show business is you get to meet interesting people, and you'd be crazy not to you know, be. I'm always kind of a little bit, I'm still very sort of starstruck when I meet people, and very kind
are
of...
Are you?
Yeah, I really like it. I really sort of... I don't know if starstruck's the right term, but it just seems like a wonderful thing when you meet people that do interesting things and have got a great story. You kind of, well, yeah, of course, yeah.
Celebrating it, in a way.
Well, I just think that would be... There'd be nothing worse than being sort of jaded about it and going, oh, yeah, whatever.
And your friends, I get the impression, are really important to you.
I really like it. I really like that sort of that thing of the... I think that's why jokes kind of are almost like a currency of male friendship. I think women are much better... you know, there's a much higher sort of average emotional intelligence with women than there is with men. I think a lot of men have got a slight arrested development when it comes to sort of sharing and opening up. And I think jokes are a way of kind of, you know, talking about sport is another one, but, you know, talking, you know, making someone laugh is a way of saying I like you and I hope that you like me too.
Yes,
and
that's so true.
We're in this space together. So I think that's why a lot of people just go, here's one for you. It's kind of a nice...
Yeah.
It's a nice thing. I think sometimes you give people the ammunition for that. I really like that sort of sense that sometimes people, like fathers and sons, will come to the gig and kind of you feel like, oh yeah, just sort of having a laugh together. This is their thing. It's not mum's thing, it's their thing. They like
well,
this.
Well, it is that need to share it, isn't it? Which you really get with comedy. And
I think
often
you sometimes
not with
get
drama.
It with a brilliant joke. You
yeah,
get like the,
yeah.
Wow, that's an incredible thing.
Although I feel tense when someone says, I've got a great joke. I think just tell it. I feel real pressure. I feel you're putting pressure on me now.
I've started doing a thing now where just to sort of make it interesting for me, of going, tell me the setup, I'll do the punchline. I do this for a living. And honestly, worst case scenario, it'll take me 20 seconds to work it out. But they're, you know, because people tell me like pub jokes and I know the punchlines because...
Oh, okay, I see.
I found that if you tell someone, oh, I've heard it, you can slow them down,
right.
But you can never stop them.
Yes.
If someone's halfway through a joke and you go, oh, I've actually heard this, they go, oh, well, I don't know if you've heard, because the ending, it's a twist. I go, yeah, it's a f***ing joke.
I know it.
I know this one. My favourite thing is getting told back, and I got this on email the other day from a friend who sent me one of my jokes. We're exchanging jokes on email because I was trying to cheer him up, and he sent me one of my jokes back, which I just thought was... Well, I didn't say anything because it would be a dick move, but it's like the nicest possible thing.
Yeah.
Oh, you'll like this? Yeah, I do like that,
Did you not say, actually, no? Well, that's good that
well,
you didn't...
Well, actually, that's one of mine. Yeah, no, I should have said that. Great move.
So, Jimmy, I also wanted to say, you give very good advice. And what I like about the advice you give, I find, is it's very practical, because you're quite a pragmatic person.
What's that? Do I give good practical advice?
Yeah,
I'm
you do.
Think,
No, I don't mean, like, my car's broken down.
Yeah.
You'll just say, well...
Get that fixed, love. I think there's a lot of people don't listen very well. You know, I think when a friend comes to you with a problem, they invariably know the answer.
Right.
And they're just checking. They're just kind of double-checking their logic. That's an amusing-looking dog. It's basically a cartoon dog. We've just passed a dog that's made of scribble. It was drawn
Scribble dog?
Yeah, it was sort of drawn by a child and then brought to life somehow by magic. That is a scribble
dog. I love
dog.
Scribble dog.
There's nothing, you know, better to be than, you know, a foul-weather friend. You know, if someone's going through something, it's good to be the person that calls.
You always say you've
always
realised
call.
That with
always
things
call.
That you've
Even if you
through.
Don't know what to say. Even if you sort of go, oh, I don't know, do I know him well enough? Do I know him well enough to go and visit? Well, he's definitely dying of something, so go. Go, don't feel awkward. If you do feel awkward, just go, I feel a bit awkward, but I thought I'd come and say.
And you learn... Oh, do you think this is all right with these? What are these characters like?
Yeah, they might eat my dog. I've got other dogs. We've been through this.
All right.
Fine, well, they're good.
I'm interested in what you think of this, because you were a kind of late developer. That's not unkind.
No, I think that's fine. I didn't lose my virginity until I was 26. That's very late in this sort of day and age.
And that meant... Why was that, do you think?
I don't know. I think I was quite sort of repressed emotionally, a little kind of block on that. I was quite a religious kind of person. I sort of had, you know, some faith and stuff. And I kind of... I don't know. I think I had sort of maybe grand romantic ideals. I'm not sure. I mean, it's difficult to kind of... to pinpoint. And I kind of, in a way, not to dismiss the question,
yeah.
I sort of think it doesn't matter. I kind of think you could spend your life in Freudian therapy analysing why. Doesn't matter. Just what you're doing now, how you, what you know, what's the future?
Mm.
We spend a lot of our time in the present or in the future, and there's only kind of right now and trying to be in that. So don't try and overanalyze it. My God, I'm an amazing looking greyhound.
It's incredible.
A whip it. All right, it's a whip it.
Lovely looking.
Yeah, that's a great color. That should really live in my front room. That would go with everything.
It really would. Yeah. It's good for your color.
Yeah. God, I can't remember. What was I whittering on about?
You were just saying that you don't think it's relevant, essentially,
well,
that you lost your virginity late.
I think it's a nice thing to discuss. I know it sounds sort of a bit self-aggrandizing. I think it's a nice thing to discuss, because I think someone listening to this who's 22 and hasn't done that and feels like, oh, life's passing me by. I think especially now, the fear of missing out in society, or the fear of everything's happening somewhere else, to someone else. And if you're not a billionaire by the time you're 21, like Justin Bieber, somehow life's rubbish. It's like, I didn't really have to deal with that as a child. I sort of grew up in Slough, in quite what I thought was a very nice place with nice people. I didn't sort of feel like I was missing out on anything, because I wasn't aware that there was anything better than that.
Mm, mm.
Now it feels like it's very unfair on, you know, children growing up, because they get to see everything else. They get to see, like, you know, these... you know, Sweet 16 shows on MTV where people get bought Lamborghinis, and you kind of go, oh, right, that looks good. Where's that going on?
Yeah. So it encourages the feeling of dissatisfaction with your own
I think, or
life,
a little
I
bit
suppose.
Of kind of alienation or whatever, you know, kind of feeling like there's a better
world.
And I mean, maybe that makes you strive for more things. Maybe that's not so terrible, but it strikes me that kind of material kind of worship is kind of a bit... I don't know, I think social media is kind of, it's amazing in so many ways. It's, you know, it's given everyone a voice, everyone an opinion.
Mm.
But it's also very sort of dangerous as well, because you go, well, there's no, the post-fact world that we live in is a product of that, where everyone's opinion is as valid as everyone else's opinion.
Yeah.
And it used to be, no, we just had like an expert on the news. He's an expert, he's got a degree in that.
Yeah.
He's like, he's a doctor, listen to him. And then someone else goes, no, actually, I think MMR... I think probably gives you something up. You don't know anything about it.
And it's weird, that whole notion of having a trusted news source as well, which obviously that's all kind of collapsed a bit as well.
Yeah, it's a, you know, and I think that, you know, for me, it's the most sort of I mean, I sort of don't mind that for me as much as the teenage thing of going, you know, the idea that you're on Instagram and Twitter and everything else, and it feels like your life is sort of, you know, being judged against everyone else's very early on.
But you didn't, when you were growing up then, I think you were probably just thinking, well, I don't know, but like you didn't feel that pressure, did you? So when you went to Cambridge, did you, were you kind of sociable? Were you going out a lot?
Yeah.
Were you,
drinking quite a lot, I think, you know, kind of college was, it was mainly around booze, like in a way that wasn't entirely healthy.
Mm.
I've got quite a non-addictive personality, so I think... Yeah, I'm not very good at... I mean, I'm quite good at sort of... I don't need to... I didn't drink for about 12 years when I started doing comedy. Not out of any great... I mean, I wasn't properly teetotal. I was teetotal for probably about 8. But it wasn't out of any kind of, I need to give up booze because I'm drinking too much. It was just like, well, I can't be hungover tomorrow because I want to write jokes or learn how to write jokes. And then I can't be drunk tonight because I'm on stage and then I've got to drive back. And it was almost a kind of a practical thing. And it was also, I was drinking, I think, after college, I think it was about kind of sort of cheering myself up a little bit, or like drinking for the wrong reasons, like trying to recapture the college years.
Yeah.
That's an odd phase of life that no one really talks about, post-college, trying to keep that going.
Well, yeah, that's a bit of a depressing 3 or 4 years, isn't it?
Like where you sort of go, yeah, because I remember chatting to my friend Rufus, who's, you know, wise beyond his years, sort of, like my first job, going, oh, God, I feel a bit down. This is rubbish. He went, yeah, this, you've never worked before. Shit, isn't it? Get up at 6 in the morning and you get home at 8 and you're exhausted and then you have to do it again. It's rubbish. College was easy, wasn't it?
But I like that you've sort of made that distinction between clinical depression in a way and environmental dissatisfaction.
Sadness. Well, isn't it a weird thing in our society? There's virtually no stigma to saying I'm depressed. There's almost a bit of a glamour to it. Like, oh, I'm depressed and I'm suffering from this. Like, put it down, but it's a very serious thing. But sadness, there's a real stigma to that. Oh, I'm just really sad. You know, so I haven't got a girlfriend and my job's boring. But there's a real stigma to that. But I think actually there's something about facing up to that and acceptance that kind of drives the next step. That's a really...
Yeah.
Like accepting what is rather than how you want things to be. Accepting what is and then moving on to the next thing seems to be a really good...
Living in the present. That's what they say. So, but my larger point as well, I've got this theory. Because, you know, when people say, well, the great thing is he's sowing his wild oats, he's getting it all out of his system. My theory on that is it's a bit like saying, it's great that you start smoking, you'll get it all out of your system, you'll never want to do it again. It's like injecting heroin. Just do it and then you'll just give it up and you'll never get a sense of, oh, I wish I could do that again. I think the problem is once you start, it's you just think, oh, okay, I'd like to do that again. So what I'm saying is I think you did the right thing. Like, what would you, in your dotage, in your later years, are you going to be, would you like to be doing like a light ent show? Would you like to be still gigging?
I think it's, I'll come back to my earlier point on this. I think it's whatever I do, I'll post-rationalise and go, yeah, I always thought I would end up, you know, but it's but it's never really the case. I mean, I think it's, you know, if I got offered, you know, in 10 years' time, if I got offered the One Show, I sort of think the One Show is the best job on British television.
Do you?
I know that's a weird thing, but it's because it doesn't seem like the most glamorous, because thing, but you go, basically you're doing an interview show with everyone. Everyone comes through that door and you get to meet everyone and it's an easy gig and it's fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, there's no pressure to be hilarious on it, but it's kind of lighthearted. It's a lovely, you know, it's a nice gig.
But I can see you carrying on doing comedy forever, pretty much, you know.
Well, it's an odd thing, though. I sort of, there's a...
When I say comedy, I mean doing, you know, gigging.
There's a bit of, yeah, I think I would try and do that. But there's a bit of me that goes... I kind of have quite a dark sense of humour, and you kind of want to be authentic.
No.
You want to be authentic.
Breaking news, everyone.
Oh, you want to be authentic when you're eyeing on someone's doing a poop.
Okay. I'll get the
and then you want to be you want to be authentic on stage. So it's that thing where you go, you at some stage I slightly worry about the kind of social media thing of going, you could be deplatformed as a comedian now in a way that didn't seem feasible 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because
it
doesn't feel like now you could. It feels like you could say the wrong thing.
When you say deplatformed, I like that word. What, just so it's the idea
well,
that it can
that
happen
really,
overnight.
I find that the most shocking sort of thing that's happened in the last maybe 5 years. Not what Germaine Greer said, but the fact that Germaine Greer, the woman that wrote The Female Eunuch, like a proper era-defining feminist thinker, was deplatformed. She can't speak at a university now. And you go, well, that's just, you're not having the debate. This is, and it's coming from the left, this kind of right-wing sort of, I don't know, it's a very odd time. And it feels like comedians, we have a certain license to say whatever we want and just go, look, it's just a joke.
Yeah.
But at some stage, something could happen and you kind of go, it could be taken away. You might not. And I suppose that's a way of me also kind of reminding myself of, again, how lucky I am that I get to tell jokes. Because at some stage, it could have gone another way with any of the controversial jokes that, the papers go, oh, there's been a meltdown on Twitter. People are very upset about this.
But do you get the sense as well with that? You don't strike me as someone that would allow that to inhibit you professionally.
Not really. I think you get into an odd situation now where it's probably best never to apologise for a joke.
You think so?
Well, because otherwise you might as well just apologise for all of them. Because you go, well, I didn't tell it. Like, I'm not an idiot. I didn't tell it by mistake. It's just, I said that. I thought it was funny. People laughed. I don't know what your... The end of it is, people kind of going, mixing up a joke and advocacy of whatever it is you're talking about.
Yeah.
You tell a joke about ISIS or terrorism, you're not advocating anything. You're laughing. What else are you meant to do with these terrible things? Or...
But there is more fear surrounding that, isn't there? I think people are more careful about that. And actually, you've made a point in the past, which I tend to agree with. I think I heard you possibly... It was other Desert Island Discord, but I've heard you make this point before that, you're not going and shouting it through someone's letterbox.
Yeah. So, I think that there's certainly a difference in what you do on television and what you do live, because it's, they're literally buying into your comedy.
We've reached the house now.
We have reached the house.
And so it's pretty much the end of the walk.
Just another 2.5 miles up the driveway to the front door.
And then you're gigging tonight, aren't you?
Of course, yeah, Sunday night.
So you'll have your little drive, Jimmy in the car.
I've got ages.
With his music on.
I've got, with a little bit of...
What will you have on, Selena Gomez?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, maybe?
A little bit of that. I'll probably, a podcast of some description, something. Oh, you never know.
I can recommend one. Jimmy, I've really enjoyed our dog walk. I'm holding Pooh.
It's weird.
But I'm going to come in for a cup of tea.
Thank you
so much for the dog walk.
Well, thank you. Thank you for letting me be part of this podcast, which will...
And you've got a grey... you've got what looks like a clown's button on your neck, which is the microphone, but I quite like it.
The clown's button. Okay. Again, that feels like something Alan Carr told you about and is actually not what you think it is.
Thanks for listening. I really hope you enjoyed it. And here's this week's doggy tip. Remember, money can buy you a lot of things, but it doesn't wiggle its butt when you come in the door. Well, unless you've paid someone to do that, and they probably charge you by the hour, if you know what I mean. Well, that's all for now. We'll be back soon with some of my human and furry friends. Join us again next time.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.